Welcome to Breaking the Underdog Curse for Chiropractors. I'm your host, Dr. Don McDonald, author of the best-selling book, The Underdog Curse. We give vitalistic chiropractors a chance to learn from the best around the world, discovering how they overcame their challenges and achieved success. In order for chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Now listen up, it's time to crush the curse. Are you a people pleaser? I know I sure am. And when you mix that with being a chiropractor, it can create a lot of trauma. I know firsthand, it can wear away at your health, your relationships, and your practice. I term this the underdog curse, and I've spent the last 15 years coming up with a solution. My book, The Underdog Curse, was written to help others live a more authentic life. This is very challenging if you're externally influenced. When you take an externally influenced person and have them try to spread the message of chiropractic, it can be very challenging. If you'd like to get back to who you really are, regain your health, strengthen your relationships, and increase your worthiness, please visit Amazon.com and pick up your copy of The Underdog Curse today. Remember, if we take the time to nurture ourselves, we are much stronger at serving others. For chiropractic to thrive, we must have thriving chiropractors. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Breaking the Underdog Curse for Chiropractors. This is Dr. Don McDonald, your host. And today I got a special guest that I met actually 2 years ago at a Parker seminar in Vegas. And we just saw this guy. I hadn't really heard of him before, but he had an amazing talk on stage. And he talked about this thing about the last talk. And it was funny that me and Brandy were going out for lunch afterwards, and we were kind of just chatting about it. And then we just turned sideways. We went for sushi, and he was sitting right beside us with him and his family. And I thought that was pretty cool. So my guest today is Philip McKernan. He helps people transform their personal and professional lives so that they feel more aligned with their purpose. And I think that is what we basically talk about on this podcast all the time. He's worked with a lot of chiropractors, but he's also worked with the Canadian Olympic team. He's worked with the Pentagon, and he also used to live in Edmonton, which was hilarious. So welcome to the podcast, Phil.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
That's awesome. So can you just tell some of the listeners, if they're not kind of familiar with some of the work you're doing right now, we'll kind of go into what you're doing now, and then I want to get into your history, and then we'll get through all the other questions.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose most of my clients, if not every one of my clients, are in some type of transition. I mean, we can argue that everybody's in transition all of the time, but I think there's a niggling voice, and sometimes it's louder. Sometimes the pain is more there, and they feel out of alignment somewhere. Sometimes they can identify it. Sometimes they can't. And they come to me because they want me to ask those hard-hitting questions that they've been avoiding. And they want me to support them and beat the shit out of them, for want of a better term. Because often, often we'll ask those questions of ourselves, but we won't go as deep and we won't answer them as truthfully as we sometimes could if somebody externally is kind of pushing the agenda a little bit. And I'm disconnected to the outcome. So it doesn't bother me whether somebody lives in a particular location, whether they do a particular work, or they connect deeper. It's basically trying to uncover their truth. And that's what I do for a living. Every day.
Yeah, that's cool. And so you work with chiropractors and different organizations because you speak, right? And then have you written any books?
Yeah, I've written a few books. I'm writing a new book at the moment. So the first book that is out in the world today is called Rich on Paper, Poor on Life. And that's a series of stories of people transforming from where they were to, some other change in their life, but hopefully in a more aligned way.
And I saw something on your Facebook. You're a filmmaker?
Yeah, I did a documentary. I met a filmmaker called James. I always butcher his name's Coulhan, I think is how he pronounces it. He made the film himself and his wife, Laurentine, produced and made the films Hungry for Change and Food Matters. And I remember having him at a small gathering, and he spent about 3 hours with us. And at the end of that, I walked away going, why couldn't I make a film? Which is what we did about maybe 3 or 4 years later or so. But a year and a half ago, I went to India, brought a film crew, and we filmed our first documentary called Give and Grow. In fact, if you want to, I don't know if this is appropriate, but if you want your listeners to get access to it, they can go to giveandgrow.com/gift, and you can actually download it for free.
That's cool. So we'll put that in the show notes. And again,
Yeah,
if you,
cool.
for the listeners, if you go to drdonmcdonald.com, we'll have show notes so that they can have that link so that you can take a look at that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, when you say filmmaker, I don't consider my. I mean, I technically, I suppose, I am, but it's a weird one for me to identify with. It's not the imposter syndrome. I just feel like I had such a great team around me. I don't feel like I'm the filmmaker. I think we are the filmmakers. If that makes any sense.
And I think that's what Spielberg said too. So don't worry about it.
Oh, did he say that? Oh, that sounds cool. Great. Cool.
I don't know if he said that, but we'll just say that. So to get to where you're at, and again, I'll talk a little bit more into some of the stuff you're doing now. How did you get there? Like, how did your path unfold for you?
I had this really crystal clear vision when I was about 6, and I just, you know, basically went after fulfilling it. And, you know, I'm completely full of shit right now. So it was basically experienced a lot of pain. Somebody said, what would you consider yourself an expert at? And I don't consider myself an expert. This is what I said. This is only about 4 days ago. I was in a prison, actually, speaking to inmates, which is a fascinating experience. And I said, actually, no, that's not true. I'm an expert of what it feels like to be out of alignment. So I'd love to tell you there's this fairy tale Hollywood scripted story of my evolution, which continues, by the way, and I want everyone to hear that it's continuing, is one of coming out of just a lot of discomfort, a lot of pain, and unfortunately making pretty much every mistake you can make in business and life, and just feeling really disjointed, out of alignment, really in a lot of pain. And that was kind of the thing that I needed to experience before I started to pivot.
Yes. And so you obviously, I know you lived in Edmonton, but you didn't grow up in Edmonton based on your accent, because I don't have an accent, but you do, right?
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, exactly. I don't have a very strong Irish accent. So I grew up in Ireland and I found myself living in Edmonton for just less than a year. And I Edmonton was not for me. I think I said this before we came on air. Edmonton was not for me for a number of different reasons, climate being one, et cetera, et cetera. But I will say this, and I'm serious about Edmonton. I have met some of the nicest people I've ever met in my life that I've met in Edmonton. And they're still friends. And some of them are clients. Some of the most beautiful, down-to-earth, you know, just really humble people. And that's what Edmonton gave me.
Well, the thing is, because the weather's so bad, all we can do is like hang out and be nice to each other and watch the Oilers. That's basically
yeah, well, and they're also, yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, the good old Oilers. I never got into hockey, but...
That's funny, yeah. So you were in Ireland. Like, so what made you go into, basically it's like coaching, personal development. What were you doing before that? Did you start always as a coach, or how did you even get into
it? Oh, God, no. God, no. No, I was in sales. I went into sales because I didn't know anything else. I was dyslexic. I failed pretty much every exam. Couldn't go to college as much as I wanted to. The story I've told myself for years is I didn't want to go to college. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. It sounded sexy, but I didn't even know what an entrepreneur was. So I was kind of lying to myself and everybody else. But I think that the big challenge for me was I didn't know what else to do. So sales was something you can get into without any qualification. And I think I was okay at it. I think I was honest. I think that's probably stuck to me, you know, kind of, you know, in the end. But I felt I was forced into doing something I didn't want to do. And I think years later, I finally started to, I seemed to be the guy people always came to download their shit, basically. And then finally, I decided I was going to give this coaching thing a go. And this is many years later. So I used to meet people. It was a great, phenomenally sustainable business model. And I think you can sense my sarcasm already. It was basically, you could meet me for 1 hour every week for 6 weeks. And no matter how good or bad it was going, you could not continue after 6 weeks. And then you paid me what you felt it was worth. And we would give that to a charity. So I had to take my relationship to money off the table. And I used to meet people in a pub. I just outside of Dublin in a place called Castle Knock. And I'd meet them in a pub upstairs and we'd have a cup of tea. And basically I would spend an hour with them. And in essence, I was doing it for free. And I think I meet so many people today saying, how do I find my passion and monetize it at the same time? And I think if you find something you're deeply drawn to and you're not willing to do it for free, well, then my challenge to you would be, do you really want to do it at all? So I did it for free for years. In fact, that was how I first met my first ever chiropractic. I think both of you and I know John Osborne, who's married to Marie Osborne. In fact, I was in such agony and such pain, I decided, and bear with me, I will circle back. I was so bad, I decided, you know what? I'm so bad, I'm going to go and see a quack. And I know I'm embarrassed to say this, but the quack, quote unquote, was the chiropractor down the road. And I walked into John Osborne and I walked up to the counter and John was there. His assistant was off. And I said, how you doing? I said, you're the chiro. And he said, yeah. I said, are you any good? And he looked at me in complete shock and then said, yeah, I'm very good. And John and myself are friends. He's done work with me. I'm one of the biggest advocates and believers in the realm of chiropractic. I go every 2 weeks to 3 weeks now. And my little guy who's 9 is going and everything else. So I apologize for the quack statement. I take it back. But that's where I was at that time.
That's funny because sometimes the biggest distractors become the biggest supporters. And actually, I know you've heard of Brandy's story. She called me a fake doctor the first time I met. So, you know, whether it's a quack or a fake doctor, I think the chiropractors out there were used to hearing all this stuff. And we're like, the great thing about it is even if you don't believe it's going to work, it still works.
And can I just add one other thing? I shared it that day and I've never shared it since on stage. I went because I was so bad with my back and my spine. But actually, I said to my wife at that time, I said, I don't think I want to have kids. And she said, why? And I said, I don't think I'll be able to lift them.
Wow.
Like literally pick them up. If my two kids came running in here now, my guy's 9, he's big, and the other one is 6, Maggie, I'd be able to lift the two of them on my shoulders, not because I'm the strongest guy in the world, but because I'm healthy.
That's awesome. So there you go. Yeah. And that's the thing is that we always got to remember it's usually not the pain that brings them in like solely, but it's all that ramification of everything yes, around 100%. It. Right. So how did you get to Edmonton? Like, how did you get out of, like, what made you even decide to leave Ireland?
So that was a really tough one because, you know, we didn't have the traditional thing where a lot of people, I mean, you only, historically in history, you only leave Ireland if you're dying. I mean, honestly, I'm not exaggerating. You think about it, the famine, and which is obviously was the big, you know, kind of export out of Ireland, the big mass kind of exit because people were literally dying. And the second time we saw a pretty big exit is in one of the biggest recessions that certainly Ireland has ever experienced in the Celtic Tiger, the meltdown that coincided with what was happening globally. And there was a big exodus out of the country. We left before that. And to my knowledge, my family do like me. So we weren't running from them and we weren't running from the cops that I'm aware of and so on. So we left and it was a very difficult decision, but I felt that I needed to leave the country and the people and everything I knew and was familiar with, and it was familiar with me, to really almost pivot and reinvent. And when I say reinvent, I don't mean this is a corny cliche term. I really mean find out who I am at the core. When you're around the people you love and you're surrounded by all your circumstances, it's very difficult to pivot because I'm not speaking for you, but for me, my family wanted me to be happy. They just didn't want me to change a whole lot. And because that change often stirs something in them and my friends. So for me, leaving Ireland was probably the most painful, most challenging decision in my entire life. I hope I never have to make a decision as big as that again. And even though we moved from Canada to the United States separately about 1.5, 2 years ago, but I needed to reinvent, and I got exposed to speaking in Canada. I did my first ever speaking event at the football stadium in Calgary, and then I did it at the Shaw Convention Center in Edmonton the night after. And I got a feeling of what it was like to stand on a stage in front of 300, 400, 500 people. I can't remember the numbers. And that blew me open. And I said, if I have to leave the country I love to find out who I am and to do what I love, I'm willing to take that risk.
That's interesting. And so did you move to Edmonton right from Ireland?
We got off a plane, moved to Edmonton. My wife flew in in early July, and on the way to pick her up from the airport, there was a little bit of snow, and I'm thinking, what have we got ourselves in for? I picked her up from the airport, but then I decided to bring her for a classy meal just to, you know, welcome her to Canada. So we went to IKEA and I got her a 99-cent hot dog, and we picked up our bits and pieces and moved into our house in a little neighborhood called McKernan from memory. Allendale, McKernan area.
Yeah. That's so funny. That's cool. Awesome. So what did you do in Edmonton? Were you coaching or speaking, or was that what you're doing for your income, or was it a job that you had in Edmonton?
So basically I originally came to Canada I was still holding on to this big story. And this is a story that the world still holds on to. And that is, when I make enough money and when I'm financially free, and it's such a great logical story, then I'll be able to make all of the choices that I want to make. And right. I still had that story. And while the coaching thing was emerging, it was actually, when I look back, it was like my body was screaming. My soul was nudging me and my heart was like, you know, kind of slapping me on the face. But I didn't want to listen. I did not want to hear it because my brain was so powerful. And it was overriding all of this and saying, no, shut up. You need the money and then you can do what you want. And I ended up picking stuff like real estate and real estate investing, which for me was very much out of alignment. And then I told myself this brilliant story that real estate was my passion. And when I look back, and I understand why people do that, because I did it, and this is one of the challenges in the world, that we'll say that wine is my passion and Harley Davidson is my passion and real estate is my passion. And there are things that excite you, because perhaps they excite you outside of maybe something that doesn't excite you. But I was unwilling to see and explore what was even more deeper inside of me. And that was my gift. And that was in the space of coaching and speaking and stuff like that. I'm not saying, excuse me, just to be clear, I'm gifted in that area. That's for other people to decide. But I do feel that I'm honoring more of my gift in that space, if that makes any sense.
Right. So you did have a job when you're in Edmonton.
I was starting a real estate business.
A real estate business.
A real estate business, and we were going to take lots of funds. And we had probably about 30, 40 million euros of investment money promised to us that was being raised in Ireland to buy real estate in Canada for Irish investors who were very wealthy. Sorry, they were very wealthy on paper at that time.
Yeah.
And we spent about 2 years putting the whole thing together. We had our first 500 acres we purchased. We had a deposit down, and then the economy in Ireland went off a cliff. And we had spent every penny we had. We had $200 in the bank account. We were sitting in Edmonton going, we are screwed. And in hindsight, looking back, it was the best thing that ever happened, because if it took off, I may never have gotten. As much as I'd love to say it's the opposite, that I was always destined to do this.
Yeah.
I may actually honestly have never gotten to my truth. And that is what I do today.
Yeah. And so you have $200 in your bank account and you're in Edmonton. Was it in the winter?
We were coming towards the winter. We used credit cards. We flew back to Ireland and we're sitting in my mom's kitchen, and my wife said, I'm not going back. And I said, why? She's not working. And she's a massive believer, but at the same time, this wasn't working. And the reason it wasn't working is because we weren't making money and doing well out of something we were unaligned with.
Yeah.
And then I looked at her in the eye and I said, okay, I said, F it. I said, let's do this coaching thing. And it wasn't out of desperation. It was actually because everything else wasn't working out. I ended up leaning into the very thing I wanted to do. I sent my first email out and I got an email from a place called Canmore, just outside of Calgary.
Yeah, we love Canmore.
And about 2 days later from Toronto, and the first two clients says, I'm in. And I said, you don't even know how much of this is going to cost. Nor did I, by the way, because I was making it up as I went. And they said, we don't give a shit. We've been waiting for you to launch your coaching business. This is what we know this is what you're here to do. Mm-hmm. And often it's strangers will see something in us, Don, that we don't see in ourselves or we don't want to see in ourselves.
Yeah. 100%. So then you decided that's it. You're going to go to Boulder, Colorado. Is that where
no,
you went,
right? No. We moved to Vancouver.
Oh, Vancouver first. Okay.
We moved to Vancouver and we lived there for about 8 years. And, then finally we moved to the United States about 18 months ago.
That's amazing. Cool. And so I'll get into some different questions about everything, but how did you start coaching chiropractors? How did that kind of link go together?
Well, actually, I think it was, if my memory is correct, it was John Osborne who, when I walked down the road, he used to adjust me every week and put up with my crap. And then basically, I think if my memory is correct, and hopefully John won't mind me saying this, he said, do you ever work with couples and in business? And I said, no. So I think I did some work with them around, because they had a lot of different, they had actually three practices at the time. There was some uncertainty in their lives about where they wanted to live. And I believe they were the very first chiropractors I started to engage with. And we had some conversations helping them get clear. And as I said, they were just incredible to work with, because they're action takers. They'll take risks. Yet they want to make an impact. All the perfect, like the perfect kind of storm for the perfect client. So that's how it got going. And then years later, I'd met another chiro who I started working with, and then I started speaking at some little small chiro events. And then I've done some work recently with Lawrence Thame, who he's based in Australia, and he became a client. And so just a number. And then Parker contacted me out of the blue and they asked me to speak and stuff like that. So that's kind of where it's gone from.
That's cool. And tell us a little bit about the two different kind of projects that I'm aware of. Like, one was the last talk. And yes. I wonder, tell the listeners a little bit about how that developed and what that is. I think it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, it's called One Last Talk. And One Last Talk is probably the thing that's probably taking up most of my mental bandwidth, both positively and negatively, in the sense that it scares the shit out of me because I think we're onto something really powerful. And it really lights me up because I think it's something I have to give to the world. And I use the word give intentionally. So I was getting a little bit frustrated with the industry of speaking. And I was sick and tired of going to events, hearing speakers stand on stage, share their philosophy and their 10-step system to success, getting off stage and being somebody else. Now, I know people will judge me for saying this. They'll think it's unprofessional, but you know what's my truth. So, and the being disingenuous from stage, having challenges, being a speaker and having challenges, that's fine. No one will ever convince me that's purely okay.
Yeah.
It's just when you imply everything's okay and everything's perfect and everything's awesome and you're not sharing all of your truth, I have an issue with that. Mm-hmm. Number one. Number two is I was also getting more and more disappointed with the amount of people I would meet who didn't believe they had a story, and they would be looking up to these speakers and putting them on pedestals and didn't believe they had a story. So I created a concept where we had this event, and originally it was called The Real Summit. Real people, real stories, real life, I think was the little tagline. And I remember picking the first 7 speakers and asked them to come to a speaker retreat to help them extract their story. And they said, I said, come with your 15-minute talk. And they said, about what? And I was there like, just imagine it's your one last talk, the last talk you'd ever give. And one of the women on the phone goes, okay, done, got it. And she was gone. And the other woman goes, wow, one last talk, like no pressure or being sarcastic or whatever. And that's how it was born. So basically, one last talk is a live event where you get 15 minutes or less to share the one last talk you'll ever give. And you're not allowed to speak about global warming, Donald Trump, anything that's outside of you. You have to share a part of your personal narrative, which typically has never been heard before by anybody. And we're writing a book around it. We've created a concept called One Last Letter, One Last Message. So there's a whole suite of tools to help people go deeper, share their truth. And the reason for it is that when someone shares their truth, it frees them. Secondly, is somebody somewhere in the world sitting in Yellowknife, for example, listens to this talk and goes, wow, I'm not alone, which is an epidemic in the world. And then finally, maybe my story matters. And the idea is to help them share their story. So then the ripple continues to move into other people's lives.
Is this like TED Talks? Are they recorded so that people can watch them, and will it be all over like YouTube and stuff like that? People can
watch. Yeah, so it's been really interesting. We've never allowed a camera in until recently. So we just did our first one in Boulder, our first ever actually one last talk in the United States. We've recorded 5 talks. They're going to be released in the next couple of months. We've actually technically recorded every one last talk that's ever been given, but we've released hardly any of them. And when we did, it was just internally within our small community. So now we're actually creating a podcast. And then, as I said, the book is around helping anyone in the globe extract their one last talk, understand why they should do it. That's the most important thing. And a mechanism in terms of delivering that. So all of that's going to be launched in the next couple of months.
What's the name of the podcast? So, because I know people listen to the podcast.
Yeah, and it won't be up and running until probably September, but it's going to be called the One Last Talk podcast.
That's awesome. That's cool. And so now you're kind of expanding that, right? So do you have it all around the world, like different locations that's
been? No, we have it. We have it in Boulder. We've run it in Toronto twice, Vancouver twice. So what we're looking for is we're looking to align with people in geographical locations that have a desire to give back, who don't need one last talk to pay their mortgage, but they want to do something that has a really big impact. And then we're going to align with those people. We've already identified somebody in Vancouver and Toronto, and we've had people from 16 other countries around the world reach out to us. So we're going to take it easy. We're going to take it slow. We're going to build it organically, because we're onto something I think is much more important than just trying to monetize it overnight.
Mm-hmm. No, that's cool. And you also have retreats, right? Where people, you take them to different locations. Can you describe that a little bit? Is it called Braveheart?
Braveheart Media is the business.
Yes.
And then our different retreats, the one that's probably closest to my heart is Brave Soul, which I take people to Ireland for 7 days. In if not most cases, I've never heard anybody saying they've ever done anything deeper. So it's a deep dive. It's an unapologetic deep dive into your past, into your present, and into your future. And it's very rich, deep work, and it's not for the faint of heart. It's a lot of people avoid it and avoid me because they don't want to go deep. Yeah. And that's fine. That's okay. But I feel that the deeper you go, the higher you'll fly, as cliche as that might sound. So I run these events. I go to India. I've been in Peru, Guatemala, all over the United States, Canada, like retreats all over the world. So that's what I do. That's my primary focus.
Yeah, that's cool. Cool. Now I'll get into some questions, because I know my tribe and kind of some of the challenges chiropractors might go in. So we might just pick your brain for a bit here. Are you good with that?
Absolutely. Let's go.
Okay. So a lot of times people have a challenge with finding their purpose, right? And so I was wondering if you can give listeners a couple of, I know it's hard to do it in a couple tips, but if you could do it in a couple of tips, what could you kind of give for encouragement for someone who might be trying to find their purpose, but they can't really determine it?
Okay. Well, number one is I think even the energy around the word find, which I get 100%. So this is not trying to pick holes in the question. It's more pick holes in the ask that people ask me this all the time.
Yeah.
The idea of find, if you think about it, if you wear glasses or I wear glasses and we lose our glasses, we go and we try and find them. So finding is almost implies that it's outside of you. Okay.
Great. Yep.
And, so that's number one. And I know that's a subtlety, but really to me, it's about uncovering. So that's number one. I think one of the biggest challenges, and I touched on it, is this thing about we put the label passion on so many things in this world. We slap it on wine and Harleys. And I mentioned this. And purpose is something that has been, you know, haunting humanity for so long. And yet when they go back to cave drawings thousands and thousands of years ago, not once have they found any calligraphy or paintings or any type of text that has demonstrated that anybody ever sat around asking their purpose. They used to wake up in the morning, they go and try and find food for themselves, their family, they'd have children, they'd protect their children, and they'd just do this every single day. And in recent times, I think one of the challenges is that, you know, with the emergence of the media and stuff like that, we're seeing people who are supposedly living their purpose publicizing that, and now the rest of us want a piece of that. So to me, I go to the place called, I use the word gift, okay, and I delve into that, and that's the whole premise of the documentary that we did, and really understanding that and uncovering your gift as opposed to your purpose, your gift as opposed to your passion. So I believe that we're all gifted. So that's my number one starting point. We all have a gift, and our gift lies right next to our greatest pain. Like right next to it. So for example, the reason that I feel that I hate to use the word authority, but the reason I feel I'm so passionate about aligning people in their work and themselves and their relationships is because I know what it feels like not to be. I mean, one of my greatest pains was spending 37, 38 years walking this earth as a man, disconnected from myself and everything that meant anything to me. I know what that feels like. So I feel I'm not there for the best in the world. That's up to everybody else to decide, but I definitely feel I'm really qualified to do that. Somebody who's experienced some sexual abuse, you know, they're the person that can understand and empathize with somebody that's experienced that better than anybody else can. Mm-hmm. So to me, I'd rather people consider what is their gift rather than passion or purpose. I think purpose is, if you think about it based on history, if we haven't done a really good job uncovering that as humans. So right. I'd love us to pivot a little bit and just change the conversation around that, if that makes any sense.
Okay, that's great. So how would you uncover your gift?
It's right next to your greatest pain, but that's the thing that most people want to avoid.
Right.
So if you think about a gift, and I'm trying to simplify the language around this because it can become very, this work, it's easy to complicate this work to make it sound very advanced and very difficult and very scientific. This work is incredibly easy, incredibly simple, I should say, but not always easy to tackle. So the gift is something that you already have. Okay. A passion is something, I'm just going to stick with this wine thing. So this is like wine. I'm passionate about wine.
Yeah.
So I may decide that I'm going to go and buy more of this wine because I really am passionate about it and I like it. I may choose to be selfish and sit there and drink it on my own, or I may decide that I'm going to share it with my friends. So that's like a passion. And to me, that is something that, you know, it's a commodity to some extent. A gift is something I already have, but it hasn't been necessarily gifted to me. It's something that I have that I can choose to gift it to the world. And that is what I call our truth. And our truth is, so for example, 2 weeks, probably 5 weeks ago, we had our first One Last Talk in Boulder. And everybody got up and shared the story that no one had ever heard before. The story that actually probably was the greatest shame and embarrassment they had. We had one man who stood up and talked about his kid saying to him, Daddy, one of his children saying to him, Daddy, are you going to die? Because he had cancer. We had one man stand up and his opening line was, in September 1999, I shot and killed, and he named the man. And then he goes into a story. We had another woman talk about the day she was sexually abused and it just changed her world forever. And all of these people shared their truth. And what it did was it allowed the men and the women in the room to connect to their pain as a result of that and begin to free it into the world and to free you know, that ripple effect, as I talked about. So our gift is something that, so the more you know who you are and the more you know about your pain, the more your gift is going to come to the surface. But the reason that most people never get to their gift is because they're unwilling and they're afraid, or they don't see the value in doing the deeper work and their deeper dive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I suppose a lot of times through life, that's the whole thing, is kind of getting back to it. Cause I think, and again, you'll know this from experience, but sometimes we get distracted because we're busy and we kind of start taking on stuff, and that can get us kind of, can cloud that gift. Do you find that sometimes, like, even if someone's kind of clear in their gift at one point, but then sometimes they get off track?
Yeah. And I think we mix up gift and talent. A lot of us think, you know, because I'm good with numbers and I'm an accountant, therefore I'm living my gift. You're not, you're just living in and executing your talent every day. That's all that is. And it's not, no disrespect. There's no judgment in that. It's just, it's different. I also, I'm also curious with this busyness thing. I think that busyness can get in the way, but I also think that we create busyness so we don't have to get to our gift. And I know for me, that is absolutely the case. I was a genius at creating busyness. And to some extent, I find that it still creeps in. Like at the moment, right now, quite frankly, there's a lot of things are landing and I can rationalize and justify that these are all things that I want and it's all great. But I'm just at that point right now, this week, where there's too much going on. And I'm always curious about that. When I find myself getting really busy, I look around, I realize that every one of these things are my choice and every one of these things build up. And to some extent, they get in the way of something I'm unwilling to see or unwilling to do or unwilling to feel. So I feel that a lot of us as human beings want to move away from emotion. We want to stay in our heads because it feels safe. And I think busyness helps us. It's an illusion, by the way, because we think we are controlling it, but we're not. So for any of those control freaks out there, control is a complete illusion. I find a lot of chiropractors I work with, I try to control their lives and they try to control their schedule and control everything. And they don't think they are, but they're controlling the shit out of everything. And that's actually a byproduct of something they haven't yet dealt with.
And would that be part of, like, as you're growing, you know, uncovering your gifts and giving your gifts to the world and it's hitting a higher scale, that there's more things that come into your life that you could delegate, but you're afraid to delegate those. And then that's some of that stuff that builds up.
And again, I think giving it away and delegating, I think, again, is people saying, well, they can rationalize and justify that they can't find the right people. But also there's another part of that. They don't want to find the right people, but, and they don't want to delegate it because by being in control, they connect to this illusion that, you know, they're the master of their destiny and whatever. But also there's also this element of playing small when you're doing that, because you're really not allowing yourself to fully shine, whether it's as a chiropractor or anybody else for that matter.
Right. And pretty much anybody who's made an impact on the world has surrounded themselves with a lot of other people that are using their gifts that are different from your gift. But when you work it together, it works like a team, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So I always like to talk about, there's three different levels of practice. And these are people who listen to this podcast. And I like to kind of just hit on each one just to kind of connect with those people. And the first one are these young grads that just come out of school and they have a huge amount of student loan debt. And, they just maybe open their practice. And they've heard like this huge long to-do list of all these things that you can do to start attracting new patients or practice members. And they feel kind of overwhelmed and paralyzed. What kind of advice would you have for someone who's just kind of starting and has this big, you know, heavy load of debt and to-do lists over their head?
These are people that have started their own practice or are working in a practice for somebody else?
Well, starting a practice. So even if they're an associate or they're building their own practice, they still have to go out there and meet people and kind of attract people into their practice, but they're starting kind of from scratch.
Yeah. I would ask them to challenge all of the typical kind of standard status quo things that they should quote unquote be doing. So if you're, for example, I met a lady recently at a conference and she just goes, why am I not making money? And I said, well, great. I appreciate all the context. I have no idea why you're not making money. Tell me a little bit about you. Tell me what you're doing. She says, well, I sell paintings and apparently I'm very good and everything else. And she says, and I have all these clients, but I'm just not getting paid enough and it's not consistent. And I said, you want money? She goes, absolutely. And I said, are you sure? And she goes, yeah, I think so. And I said, well, number one is there's a crack, because often we'll intellectually we want one thing, but actually emotionally we don't. So for example, in her case, she actually had a weird relationship as we got deeper, a really dysfunctional relationship with money. So while intellectually she wanted it, emotionally she didn't. So there's this conflict. Secondly, is she was dishonoring herself every single day. So I said, what are you doing from a marketing standpoint? She says, I'm on Twitter and my Facebook. I said, you like Twitter? She says, no. I said, why you want it? Well, you have to be. I said, no, you don't. I said, honor where you are. So for example, if you're into cycling and you've given up cycling, you don't cycle a lot because you're too busy being on Twitter trying to build your practice, close your Twitter account down, go cycling, get a bunch of guys together, a bunch of girls together, go cycling, and then suddenly become make that your everyday Saturday morning thing, then bring your business in maybe to support it and whatever. In other words, honor who you are in your practice. If you start doing stuff outside of who you are to try and grow your business, number two things will happen. Either it won't work or it won't matter. Either it won't work or it won't matter. In other words, you may get clients, but you'll get the wrong clients. Or two is it just won't land for you and it won't work. And then what will happen is eventually you'll begin to believe that, you know what, it's not Twitter. It's actually me. I'm broken, or I'm not good enough, or people just don't want my skill set, my way of adjusting. So then you internalize and you make that failure about you. When actual fact, it's not a failure. The universe is just saying, buddy, you're completely out of alignment, not necessarily what you're doing as a chiro, but in terms of how you're doing it. So sometimes a lot of chiros think, should I just be a musician? Should I just be an actor? Should I be a builder? Is it just I'm out of alignment in terms of what I do? And maybe the answer to that question is, yeah, maybe you're not meant to be a chiro, but also it's how you're doing it. Right. And one thing for me as a coach, could I have a bigger business? Absolutely. Could we make more money? Absolutely. But when I start to get stale around a program, I'll shut it down. Yeah. So I used to run this coaching program called Everest. It was the most successful thing we've ever done, even to this date. And we had 98% of our revenue coming from it. I came home one day to my wife and said, it's gone. She goes, what's gone? I said, Everest. And she goes, when? And I said, like, at the end of this year, it's gone. And I announced it to our community and people said, oh, what a great marketing strategy to fill it up next year. I said, well, you obviously don't know me.
Yeah.
I shut it down, gone. And without that energy in that space, that freedom, then things like the documentary and things like One Last Talk would never have emerged, because there was no bandwidth, not just physically, mentally and emotionally. Mm-hmm. So there's something for them, you know, those individuals to think about that may relate.
So you basically take that big list of things that are possibilities and find out what would be most congruent with you, that you'd enjoy to do the most, or doing the things that you'd like to do and then incorporating that in it. Right.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, somebody said to me, Don, you know, I was away on a trip with a group in Peru or somewhere. And this lady said to me, how do you pick these locations? Because we put a lot of energy and thought and intent into these. Like we're going to India in July and we're doing the highest road trip in the world across the Himalayas. We're going rafting. I've taken out a palace. And we put like tons of energy into this experience. And somebody said to me, how do you pick these locations? And I said, listen, it's really scientific and quite complex, but I'll do my best to simplify it. And she goes, yeah, I bet it is. I said, I pick places I want to go. I select people I want to go with, and I do and do the things that I want to do when we get there. And that's it. And she looked at me with this combination of complete annoyance, because she was annoyed that like that it was that easy, and pure admiration, because she's thinking, fuck, I don't do this in my life. And it really is as simple as that. There's ways I could make money. Like I could do a certified coaching program, certify people to coach, whatever. I just think that is the last thing on earth I would do. I will help people maybe coach at some point because I think I can do that very well, but I'll never certify them to be Philip McKernan coaches because I feel there's just a complete misalignment from my point of view. So I coach and I deliver an extension of who I am. And a lot of chiropractors don't do that.
Right.
In my experience.
And that's cool, because then you're basically finding out what you really are inspired to do. And it's just like, actually, I was just talking to that one of my practice members the other day saying, it doesn't matter what I go to, whether it's my accountant or whether it's a personal trainer or anything, when they are enjoying what they're doing, it's an attractive energy that you just want to go to. And I think
if I sit in front of a chiro and this, you know, the one downside is I'm inside all the time and I'm just playing, I'm just literally making this up on the spot. It's like, great, there are a park beside you. Yeah. Bring your table out. You say Tuesdays is outdoor day and I'm going to adjust everybody outside. And people say, oh, but you can't do that. Like, assuming that there's a legal, you know, you can actually legally do this within the confines of your industry. People say, you can't do that. I mean, because that sounds, I said, really? I said, why not? Like, we think so in we're so boxed in terms of what's possible in our lives. Mm-hmm. And I'm a massive fan of, and the other thing, one other thing I'm going to add as well is that I spent on Friday, 15 hours driving and delivering content to two prisons in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not looking for either, I'm sure some people will judge it in a negative sense. Other people say, oh, isn't that amazing or whatever. I'm not looking for accolades in this. What I'm trying to make a point is that, as I said, this week has been busy, too busy. But this, my book is coming along. I've got like my podcast. You know, I've got so much stuff going on right now. And the last thing in this world, logically, made sense for me is to take 15 hours on a Friday to go and to drive south, you know, 2.5-3 hours, then 2 or 3 hours across, you know, east, back up 3 or 4 hours and deliver 2.5-hour workshops in each of these places. And yet I feel, and there's a local company called Techstars who they're like a startup accelerator and they're growing all over the world. And their mantra is give first. And they're not just a company that say give first, they actually live by it. And I know they do because I've seen it. And often as Kairos or anybody else starting up a business, we go, no, the giving thing can wait. I'll give when I've got my own yard in order. I disagree. Give first. Go to a school and adjust kids. Go to an old folks home and adjust them. Go to people who are, you know, not in a financial position. Do that, but not as a marketing gig. Do it purely unconditionally and mm-hmm. do that first and then continue looking at ways to grow your business. And I know it may not make logical sense. And I almost blew off this day, and I feel selfish for saying this, but I almost blew this day off because I just didn't have the bandwidth. And yet I came back and all the projects I do have on seemed simpler or clearer or unnecessary, or I was more aligned to them because those people gave me a great gift on that day.
That's cool. And I just changed your perspective a little bit, right?
Oh man, I came off that day and I'm thinking, how dare I moan and complain about having to do a podcast? The privilege I have to not just be on a podcast today, but have the opportunity to even do one, whether I do it or not, even have that choice. And we're surrounded by so many billions of people in the world that do not feel they have this choice, or in some cases legitimately don't have a choice. And it really puts things in perspective. And to be fair, as I look back over my life, it's probably been the most successful thing, quote unquote, I do. And that is giving back. And I'd love to say I do it first all the time. I don't. I was a selfish git for most of my life. And I was all about Philip McKernan getting what he wanted first. And then I look at, and I've reversed that. Not because I'm in a luxurious position to do so, it's because I've shifted who I am in order to do that.
Okay. And that probably already goes into my second phase of chiropractor that would be listening to this podcast. As somebody who's been in practice, kind of got all their gears in order and their practice exploded. And then they kind of put their self-care on the back burner and started getting overwhelmed and then started feeling burnt out. So I'm sure you've dealt with lots of people who've had that burnout feeling.
Yes.
What kind of recommendations do you have for those?
I'd want to know why. Mm-hmm.
What are some good questions people could ask themselves to kind of get to that truth?
Well, I do feel, and again, this might sound very judgmental, but I've met a lot of people in the healthcare industry that just don't look after themselves. And mm-hmm. We can chalk it down to two things. They just become really busy mm-hmm. or they don't value who they are.
Yeah.
Because I don't think there's anywhere in between. And I feel it's down to a real sense of self-care and self-love, a degree of self-compassion. All of those things come through the lens of things like forgiveness. I believe those people just don't like who they are. And I don't care if you adjust 7 billion people in your lifetime, it's never going to change how you feel about yourself. And some of these people, and my mother is one, by the way, some of these people who give so much of themselves, they give and they pour, and yet to the detriment of their own health. They're not selfless people. They're some of the most selfish people I've ever met in this world, because they think by giving all of themselves, they're helping everybody. They're not. They're just sending out all the wrong vibes, all the wrong messages as a parent, as a clinic owner, as a chiro, as a mathematician, as an artist, as a business owner. And I feel that you're running yourself into the ground because you feel that's what you deserve. And I don't care how many adjustments, many success, I guarantee you those people, you could give them a success story. Like, I can pick my children up because of you now. Thank you. Yeah. Anyway, how are you doing today? And how's your wife? And how's your kid? They will not accept the compliment because, you know, they don't feel
right.
They don't feel deserving of it. The busyness, by the way, is in my personal opinion, as ruthless and as strong and as maybe outrageous this might sound, that is a pure and utter excuse. these people just don't like who they are. They don't love who they are. And they've never dealt with that. And as their businesses get busier and busier and busier, it gives them more opportunity not to address the real core issues. And to me, that's all I have really to say with that. I mean, I don't have a whole lot else to say with that, really.
Yeah, that was enough said, right? You got to value yourself, right? So last phase practice is leadership. So someone's been in practice for a while and they want to kind of give back or maybe contribute to other chiropractors. And I thought a good question would be for you speaking as a speaker. So say a chiropractor wanted to maybe get out in the community and become more either a leader in their community or a leader in the profession. What kind of advice would you have for aspiring speakers?
Yeah, because I think ultimately we all have this desire deep down to make an impact. And I think speaking is something that, by the way, again, you know, the thing that blocks a lot of speakers, and I see this firsthand through One Last Talk primarily, is that people say, I'm just scared of public speaking. And then they can justify it and rationalize it because all the studies say that public speaking is the number one fear in the world, or most of them anyway, next to like death and being buried with spiders and being burnt alive. And there's studies that actually say it's public speaking. So the first thing I'd like to say is, first of all, I think that's bullshit.
Completely bullshit.
And I'll tell you why. It's not the public speaking. It's what public speaking represents. So if you say you're afraid of spiders, it's not spiders. It's what spiders represent. And speaking for me, when I used to hear this, because I want to puke up every time I speak, every single time. So then people go, well, doesn't that validate what the studies? And I said, no, because I went deeper on it. And really what it is for me, and I think what it is for everybody, is that they're actually afraid that they'll stand up there and mess up. They're afraid people won't like them. They're afraid people won't accept them. And they're ultimately afraid people won't love them. And I think ultimately that's the most important thing. So to identify that, you know, you may want to give back in some capacity, which is going to require you to speak, whether it's to one person or to 1,000 people, regardless. And the biggest shift for me, Don, is, and it's still shifting, and there's days I forget about it, as I mentioned, the biggest shift for me as a speaker was the day that I recognized and really not just intellectualized it, but felt it, was the day was that, and it wasn't just a moment, but it felt like it did land one particular day. And that was, I'm not here for me. Right. My journey and my work or my gift or my speaking is actually for everybody else. And I really remember making this kind of like real connection emotionally. And I realized in that moment that actually I'm not here for Philip McKernan. And I'll never forget the day, the first time I experienced this was in Calgary. And I was very nervous and something happened that day and I was pissed off and everything else. And this man walked up and I was sitting in this big room, there's about 800 people in the room. And this man walked up and said, hi, Philip, I know you're about to go on stage. Can I introduce my parents? And his elderly parents were there. And he says, they're not even part of this organization. I just asked, could they come in? And then we've traveled 3.5 hours to hear you speak. And I made some joke and the guy, you know, saw me deflecting and goes, no, my parents are here to hear you because I've told them about you. And I realized, oh my God, the shit that I was worried about, the stuff that I was pissed off about, it was nothing. I got on that stage and I delivered that talk for those two elderly people who may not even be alive today. And when I did that, I went to a place I never imagined I could go as a speaker. Mm-hmm. So a lot of speakers will say, oh, I'm here to make a difference, but they're not really. They're here because they want their ego massaged. They're there because they want to be seen because they never were seen as a kid. They're there because they want to be seen as an authority because they want to prove something to themselves, their parents, their father, their whatever. And when you can really get to a place where you feel that you're just a catalyst, that's all you are. You're just a vessel for other people's growth. I believe you'll do your greatest, greatest, greatest work.
That's awesome. Cool. Well, we've almost run out of our time. That went by really fast.
Holy shit. That was fast.
I was like, wham, bam. So what I like to do with all my guests is just have them share some parting words of wisdom or whatever inspiration comes to top of your mind to talk to all the chiropractors out there that are all across the world. Some of them feel like underdogs. Some of them are underdogs. Some of them are having problems with self-worth. Some people just feel a little stagnant and need a little spice to kind of get them on the path. What kind of parting words of wisdom would you like to leave our guests?
Oh man. You know, we've heard this thing about money. I mean, there's two things. This just coming to me right now is one is do a kind of a deeper analysis around your relationship to money, not in terms of how to spend it or how to make more of it, but actually what's your relationship to money. And I think that's an area that I see a lot of chiropractors deeply struggle with, number one. And number two is somebody asked me in the prison the other day, they said, you don't seem to care about money. And I said, I don't, which is not entirely true. And I found myself saying, no, hang on a second, that's not entirely true. I do. I just don't care as much about money as I do about impact. And I feel that a lot of us will say these things intellectually, go, oh no, it's the number one thing is impact. And my number one value in inside my practice is, you know, impact and whatever. But we don't live that. We say these things, and there's a disconnect between our brain and our heart. So to me, connecting emotionally with actually the impact you're here to make in this world, if you make it, and somebody used to say to me, and probably have said to you, Donald, you know, do what you love and the money will follow. And you know, I remember hearing that for the 100th time. I wanted to kill the guy who said it and burn that out of every dictionary or every Google search, because I thought it was complete horseshit. But what I've done now is that we started to pivot, and it's all about impact. So for example, just one example of this is my coaching is not now for everybody. My coaching is actually really for people who want to make an impact. And we created a space to help them catalyze that, to amplify that. And even that little emotional shift has made such an impact in terms of my energy for the clients. So think about your clients coming into your practice, and think about these as incubators and accelerators and vessels for impact at home and in their community and everything else. And if you can pivot and think about just purely focus on impact and make the money secondary, I really believe you'll be happier and you'll be more fulfilled. And I think you'll be richer financially and emotionally as a result of that. And the last thing is, if you ever do get on stage, don't fall into the trap that almost every speaker falls into, that you need to be an authoritative figure. You need to have your shit figured out. Have the courage to be vulnerable, to show your humanity, because the greatest leaders in the world are really, truly, authentically vulnerable. But the problem with vulnerability today has been used as a tool, and you can feel it when a speaker throws in a vulnerable story because they're trying to get you to like them, but they haven't actually done the work. So that's, I don't know if that's any of any value, but that's what's coming to me right now.
That's amazing. No, I think that's perfect. So, you know, we thank you so much for being on podcast. I know you're a busy guy, super busy. So we're one of the busy things for you for this week. So hopefully it was okay for you. I really appreciate you being on the show.
Don't get me wrong. Don't feel like I'm squeezing this in. I'm not. I'm honored to be here. I know I've met you guys before. I'm still pissed that you didn't buy my sushi that day in the counter, but it is what it is. But no, I'm joking. From my limited knowledge of both what you, you know, you guys are doing, and Brandy's doing, it's great. And I love the energy, and I love the fact you guys care enough to be outspoken and say the things sometimes that people don't want to hear. So anybody that's doing that in any industry, I have a lot of time for. So thank you.
That's no problem. Thank you. So all the guests out there, come back to the show notes, drdonmcdonald.com. There'll be all the links so that you can find, where's the best way to contact you, Philip?
Just philipmckernan.com is the best way, or onelasttalk.com is the kind of the main two sites that we have right now.
Okay, so the last things that are left with me are uncover your gift and focus on impact, and all else will follow. So like always, get out there and crush the curse.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you receive value from this episode, please take some time to rate and review us on iTunes or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. If you know a fellow chiropractor that could benefit from this message, please share it with them. Because it's my goal to provide you with great content, please contact me if you have any questions at drdonmcdonald.com or find me on Facebook. I look forward to hearing from you. So until next time, Dr. Don out.